Desire comes from passion, right? Do you desire is when you want something. Do you want something that you don't like? No. Do we want something that we like? Sure. Do we want something that we love? Yeah. Do we want something we're passionate about? You bet. I want that real bad. Okay? So desire is fueled by passion. Okay? So how do we get passion? Passion comes from appreciation. Appreciation? Yes. Okay? We have to appreciate something before we can like it. And then we'll love it. And then we'll be passionate about it. So appreciation comes from knowledge. We have to learn about something. So let me walk you through the process. Here's the evolution of passion. Yes, this is what I think about when I lay in bed at night. It's sad, okay? But I did. I figured it out. I want you to think about a person, a place, or thing that you at one time weren't really crazy about, but eventually, in time, you love it. That person, place, or thing. I can think of a couple of examples. My best friend, we met in the seventh grade, and I did not like him. We never spoke a word, but I did not like him. In fact, we met in the principal's office because we had a fist fight. No words were spoken. We just didn't like each other. We wound up in the principal's office. We shook hands. And in fact, I will see him at probably about 1 o'clock today. We are still best friends. And it's been awesome. And so it was a great learning process to go from not liking somebody to loving somebody. Espresso. I've always liked coffee, but I didn't have really espresso for a number of years. And the first time I had espresso, I was like, my God, why would somebody even make something like this? This is awful. It was horrible. It was so strong. I just didn't understand. But then I got a lesson about it. What made that so special? Well, that's interesting. Let me taste it again. Okay, I began to get a little appreciation for it. Well, today it's the only thing I can drink is espresso because I love it so much. I love knowing about where it comes from and how it's made, the certain machines that it has to be made from. I bring my espresso machine with me when I travel. It's a problem, okay? But it's a passion. So think about a person, place, or thing that you didn't know about, you didn't care for, you were indifferent about it at one time, okay? You applied a little bit of knowledge, and you gained at least an understanding of that person, place, or thing. And then in time, you had that understanding, you learned more about it, you experienced it more, and then you actually gained an appreciation for it, right? Interesting. I like it. Okay. Yeah. And then that appreciation with more knowledge and more time and more interaction, a deeper understanding, you liked it, that person, place, or thing. And in time, with more knowledge and more experience, that like turned to love. And eventually, that love can turn to passion. Okay? When we're passionate about something, we love talking about it. We love sharing it. Oftentimes too much because people don't always share our passion, and you probably look like a bit of a wacko because there it goes again. But when we're passionate about things, we're obsessed with it, and that's a very, very powerful thing. And put in the right context of what we want, and we can share that, and we can get people to be knowledgeable about what it is that's important to us. They will begin to share our passion. So knowledge is the seed of passion. There it is, knowledge. How do we get people to be passionate? Knowledge. We give them knowledge to use, and we expect them to use it. It's not an option. It's not here if you like it. It's here, use it. How are you using it? Show me. Okay? And people will become more knowledgeable about what it is that you want, and they'll gain an appreciation. They'll learn to like it. They'll learn to love it, and they'll be behind you all the way. And then eventually you step back and you're supporting them, watching them become passionate. And I couldn't help myself but put a little agricultural spin on my presentation, because here, as the seed, if knowledge is the seed of knowledge, if we plant a seed and we don't water it and we don't fertilize it and cultivate it, we will never have a harvest. Well, people are the same way. We need to feed them and we need to nourish them with their knowledge and spirituality, to get them to be all that they can be. But this will never work if we don't have an environment that's conducive for learning and growth. If there's a hostile environment, if there's a stressful environment, if it's an environment of blaming people for things that go wrong, okay, you'll never get there. And oftentimes I find, at least in my business and organization, it's a lack of organization that creates hostility or chaos, right? So being organized, having crystal clear expectations, a real plan for how things are supposed to be done, who does what, how it's done, gets rid of a lot of frustration and chaos. And so structure, you know, creating structure and environment is very important, but not before you create a vision, as we spoke about before. Every organization needs a vision. I love when I'm over at CAB, their function room, because right on the wall is their mission statement. And it's there all the time to see. And it's nice because I can refer to it when I'm talking to people. See, they live their mission statement, which is how you get to your vision. Okay, so you have a vision of what you want. Your mission statement is how what you do to get there. But vision brings purpose to what people do. Without a vision, if people don't know where they're going, there's no purpose to their work. Then it's just work, and that's not fun. So, you know, football, for example, you know, the Super Bowl is the vision. And when they practice all day, they play the game once a week to entertain us. But they are working hard at it all day long, every day. And that's very, very hard work. It's painful, physically painful. It's mentally stressful. But it's worthwhile because they've got a vision of where they got to go. So that vision brings purpose to what it is they're doing. They know why they're doing it. Structure and discipline. When I say discipline, I don't mean punishing people. I talk about structure in an organization, and I talk about discipline in carrying out those commitments that you make. That's the difficult part. It's easy to write, here's how we're going to behave, but to actually behave that way is a lot more work, and it takes discipline. And we need to set crystal clear expectations for people if we want them to succeed. It's very important. Knowledge, we said, is the seed of passion. It's our responsibility as leaders, whether it be in our home or organization, to instill a sense of knowledge into people. And a little story, I was at dinner probably 10 years ago at Gramercy Tavern in New York City. We sat down with a group, and we were going to order, and the waiter comes over, and he says, I'd like to recommend our foie gras terrine tonight. And he went into exactly how you make a foie gras terrine. I could tell you at that time, most of my cooks would not know how to make a terrine of foie gras. It's pretty tricky. It takes a lot of skill. And here a waiter is telling me how to make a foie gras terrine. So I'm thinking to myself, this guy, he must have come out of the kitchen. The kitchen was too hot. He didn't want to work in the kitchen anymore. So he came out to the dining room. So I asked him, I said, so did you used to work in the kitchen? He says, no. I said, well, how do you know how to make a foie gras terrine? He says to me, he looks around, he says, we're expected to know. I almost fell off my chair because training for me, as I said before, was an obligation. It's on-the-job training. I never really took it seriously. But once we really started getting into training, I took that moment, that realization that teaching people and showing people how to do things isn't good enough without expecting them to use it. We need to expect people to use the knowledge that we give them if we expect it to move the operation forward. Accountability, performance feedback. Everybody needs to know where they stand. Okay? With 150 people, I found it very difficult to give people really good feedback. I found myself going into every kitchen every day, acknowledging everybody's existence. Thank you for coming to work. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. It was a little, you know, it really wasn't meaningful to me. So again, I would lay in bed at night thinking, what am I going to do to make people engage, fully engage in what I'm doing and see my vision? I said, I got to give them crystal clear feedback. Now, I'm here laying in bed. I can't sleep because I'm worried about everything. I know everybody else is sound asleep. They're having a great time. They're loving life. So I decided I was going to go back. I made a commitment to myself. I will go back, and in every kitchen, every day, I will make a significant interaction. And a significant interaction for me was I would say something to a person. I would say hello to everybody, but I'd zero in on one person's work. I would talk about their work. I would give them feedback that would make them go home, lay in bed, and look at the ceiling like I was, and say one of two things. Either, I had no idea I was so valued. I can't wait to go back tomorrow and do more. Or, I better change now or today, or I won't be going back there tomorrow or Monday. I didn't care one way or another, but I wanted to make a significant interaction. I kept that commitment, and I did, and I began to see things shift, and people get more engaged and find really the value in what they were doing. I wanted them to see that what they did really mattered. The quality of work they did does matter. It's not up to everybody else. It's up to you, and it's appreciated when it's done right. So I had my significant interactions, and then... Really a life-changing moment, and some of you may have heard this before, because I have to tell this story. We got a dog, a family dog. It was a boxer, it was a big dog. Well, it wasn't big at first, but it got big very quickly, and it was very strong, and it was knocking everybody over. That dog just wants to play. It was moving furniture, it was knocking kids over. People would walk in the door, and it would be bounced back. The dog was like 75 pounds and very strong, and we said, this can't go on. We got to do something. So we went to the local high school where they had dog training, and we got the dog trained. And I was saying in about four sessions, this dog that doesn't speak a word of English was doing everything I was telling it to do because I was rewarding it with my voice, oh, good dog, right? Or I was petting it. I was feeding it a treat every time it did something right. I was forbidden to recognize bad behavior. So it's like, yeah, wipe it up and get over it. But I walked out of there saying, you know, this is pretty amazing. This dog that doesn't speak a word of English is now doing everything I'm telling it to do because I'm giving it positive reinforcement. I'll bet you this works with people too. So I went back to work, and I said, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try finding really great work, not just everything, but really special work that took a lot of effort and recognizing it in a big way. I'm going to celebrate it. That's what I'm going to do. So I went back to work. This changed my organization in days. In days. If I say 5 to 7 days, I'm exaggerating. The next day, I found a difference. So I went to the first person. I saw really great work, something I really loved. I think it was a sauce or something. I said, oh, wow. I said, hold on a second. This is amazing. I said, everybody, I want everybody to stop working and come around here for a minute. And Will, I want you to tell everybody what it is you did to make this whole thing. In fact, everybody get a spoon and taste this. And it was like, oh, there's not much there, chef, you know. But anyway, Will, tell people what you did. So having Will tell people what he did to make something excellent was so much more powerful than me telling people what Will did. Okay, so we put Will on this pedestal with a spotlight. He was beaming proud. Everybody was, of course, envious of his position. So what do you think they did the next day when they came to work? They tried to do something really extraordinary. And I'm telling you, the next day, I had people coming, chef, taste this. What do you think? Chef, come over here. We wanted to tell you about our new idea of what we want to do. Look how we did this. Look how we changed that. People thrive for recognition. It's a basic human instinct. And it works. And it's wonderful because it's so positive and it's so good. And it gave me such pleasure to be able to recognize. And I found myself starting to look and become more positive and finding more things. That doesn't mean that when I found something that wasn't good, I didn't recognize. I remember that dog trainer telling me, ignore the bad behavior, but I couldn't do that, so I had to address it, but I now addressed it in a different way. I used to be very quick to tell people what was wrong in a very professional way, but this is wrong, it needs to be done, this is how I want you to fix it. No more. Now when I found something wrong, I would call that person and say, evaluate this on a scale of 1 to 10, knowing clearly that we all, when anybody does sub-quality work, we know it. We know it the whole entire time. We just hope we don't get caught, right? So I would say, evaluate this on a scale of 1 to 10. And the person would be, oh, chef, I'll give it a 4. And I was, oh, come on, I'll give you a 6. But what's it supposed to be? They say, chef, it's got to be a 10. That's right, it's got to be a 10. And they'd start to give me an excuse why. I said, no, it's not important why it's like this. And it wasn't. It was not important to me why it was like that. I'm not in the business of making people grovel What I need to know from you is, what are you going to do now to fix this? And what are you going to do tomorrow so this never happens again? That's what I need to know. Because you own your work. You are the CEO of what you do here. And I need to know that from now on, this will never happen again. And I can tell you that when I went through that with people, I never, ever had to address a quality issue with them again. They clearly understood that they own the quality of their work. And that was amazing to me. That really took me by surprise. Communication. There's a commercial on TV. I forget what the bank is called, but it says listening is the start of good communication. This is so true, and there was a moment that I learned this as well. I was in the main kitchen. We were serving about 1,500 people up on the... So the main kitchen is on the second floor. Upstairs, it was 1,500 people. And the banquet chef came down and gave direction to a new cook who he needed to braise about 250 pounds of pot roast. So we had four electric skillets, and this meat was piled up in big plastic lugs. And the banquet chef was so clear. I listened to him. He gave explicit directions. Heat the skillets. Get the oil hot. Sear the meat. Season it. Take it out. Put the vegetables in and caramelize them. Add the tomato product. Put the meat back in. Put the liquid. Just cover it and simmer it so that in 2.5 hours we got beautiful tender meat. And the whole time he's explaining this, and he was perfectly right, this kid is shaking his head. Yes, 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 yes. Acknowledging everything. The banquet chef was so sure that he gave a good explanation. He made himself clear because the other person acknowledged it. He went back upstairs to serve 1,500 people. I, on the other hand, hired the kid about 2 weeks before, and I knew from the interview they didn't know how to do that. So I went to him. I said, "How are you? Do you know what you're going to do? Tell me how you're going to do this." Blank look, deer in the headlights, had no idea. So we got it fixed. The next day I called my chefs in the office. I said, "From now on, we will no longer delegate by telling people what to do." And he looked at me like I was crazy. And I told him the story. I said, "From now on, we delegate by asking people how they're going to do something. You can give a vision for what you want. I want this pot roast braised. I want it to taste great. And I want it to be tender. I need that done in 3 hours. Now tell me, how are you going to do that?" So what happens here is, first of all, nobody likes being told what to do, right? And so now we're giving the person an opportunity to show us what they know, what they can do, and we can either acknowledge and approve. We can sit there like this or like that and say thumbs down or thumbs up. And when it's thumbs down, ask the question, "Well, if you did that, this is what you're going to get. Is that really what you want?" "No, that's right. Okay, so let me help you get there." So then we can give suggestions and help people. But no longer delegating by telling people what to do. We need to ask questions. And what's more important to me is not what's in my head, is what's in your head of the person who's going to actually do the work. This all starts with you. If we're not role models for what we want, if we don't demonstrate behavior for what we want, okay, we'll never get other people to do it. It's clear. It's easy leadership. So we have to ask ourselves, am I the most passionate person on the team? And you might be, but if you're not showing it, if you're not showing your enthusiasm and your passion for what it is you want, how could you ever expect other people to feel that passion and be passionate as well? And what happens is the busy day is what gets in our way. Okay? If we could easily walk right past our team, we're on a mission to get something done, we're very busy, we're stressed, we're overloaded, and sometimes we walk past people and just forget to say hello. Never mind, take a moment to see what it is they're doing and share how important it is of what they're doing and how it relates to helping us get through to our mission. Are you reactive or are you proactive? When things go wrong, are we busy blaming people? Are we so busy trying to find out what goes wrong and what could have been, or very creating a very negative environment? Or do we spend our time and energy creating a plan of how things are going to be so that when problems do arise, which they will, right? Anticipate it, expect it, but here's what we're going to do when it happens. That's what's being proactive. It's a very positive form of communication. Do you focus on problems or solutions? That's simple. These are things we all have to ask ourselves, right? And we all do it some of the times. The thing is, how do we want to shift ourselves and become more positive? Do you seek greater knowledge? So if we want our people to become more knowledgeable and we're expecting them to learn and to use it, Are we doing the same for ourselves? Are we going to continuing education? Do we go to seminars? Do we get out and network? Do we go to see other businesses and other organizations and see how they do it so that we can learn from it and bring that information back and share it with others? Do you put forth the greatest effort? And I don't mean do you put in the longest day? Are you lifting? Are you doing the hardest work? Leadership really is about being symbolic. It's being in the right place at the right time. If there's something very important going on in your organization and you're not there, it's easy for people to think maybe it's not that important. I thought this was important, but he's not here. He or she's not here. Maybe it's not that important. Oh, well, let's just go through it. So, you know, knowing when to be at the right place at the right time symbolically is very important. There were many, many nights where I would rather have gone home, but there was events that were very important, and I knew that my team was excellent. They had it down pat. I tested the food before the event, and I knew it was great, but I just stayed because they needed to know that it was important enough for me to stay and see it through and watch the details and help them and support them. It was symbolic, that's all. So no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. So to tap into people's hearts, to get them to buy into your message, to see your vision, to understand what you want, to take that information and use it, no one's really going to do it unless we're showing that we've got some care for them. And how do we do that? Again, knowledge, take some time, get to know people, show a little, learn a little appreciation for what they are and who they are and their struggles, right? Learn a little bit more. We learn to like them. We learn to love them. And people feel that. And when people feel that, there isn't anything that they won't do for you. So just to recap for everybody, we understand that passion is what changes the world that we live in and our world as well. But to do that, we have other people. We need to find people that take initiative. We need to inspire them and give them the desire to put the greatest effort forward. We need to feed them with knowledge because knowledge is the seed of passion. And then we need to walk the walk and lead by example. It's that simple. It's really not simple at all. But remember this, that there are no great people. There are ordinary people that do extraordinary things. So let's do something extraordinary. Thank you.